It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web.
Live it off the wall.
Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
I got a special treat for you this evening. A young man that you all know is Joe the Policeman from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. I want you to put your hands together and welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause for Jackson Heights' own
Mr. Chris Shan.
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Shan.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. I'm Chris Shan. You'll be meeting our co-host, editor, producer, and Lord knows what else he does, Joe Auriemma, in our next segment. But first, let's get things underway by telling everyone, hey, you know, the baseball season is here. It has kicked off, and it has kicked off in grand fashion. The Yankees and the Red Sox up at Fenway Park. Can't get any better than that, really, when you're starting a new baseball season to have Yankees and Red Sox. It really just gets the blood flowing and gets you into the season right off the bat. Not that it would be any different with another team, but it's exponentially more exhilarating when you're dealing with the Yankees and the Red Sox. And I got to tell you, I mean, listen, we talk about this all the time, how Yankee fans, and look, I'm not, you know, getting down on you. I'm not talking down at you. They live on every inning, every pitch, every second, every minute. I mean, there could be a leadoff double and, you know, Chicken Little is saying the sky is going to fall. After the first game on Sunday when the Yankees blew that 5-1 lead and CC Sabathia, it seemed, was cruising into the fifth with a one-hitter, we all know what happened. We all know the wheels came off the bus. The wheels that were going round and round lost some lug nuts and the bus went skidding into an embankment. It was the first game of the season. Everybody got all over the bullpen. Oh, my God, the bullpen's supposed to be a strength. Da-da-da-da-da. If you don't believe me, do yourselves a favor. If you're a fan of the podcast, get on Twitter. Oh, and if you're a fan of the Yankees, get on Twitter. Follow me, at BPTV17. Follow Joe, at Joe Auriemma, NYY. Follow at Yes Network. You'll see. Because you'll get our friends, and you'll follow them, and you'll follow these, you know, insane Yankee fans that do live on every millisecond of everything that happens in the Yankee universe. Again, I can't get on them for that. They love their team. I have no problem with that. Loving your team is great. But check this out. It's a 162-game season. You can't get all bent out of shape after one game. The Yankees have a day off, so everybody stews in, you know, the 9-7 comeback win that Boston has. And listen, Fenway Park is tricky. Very tricky. No lead is safe there. None. Boston may not seem like on paper like they have a good offensive team, but come on. Pedroia and Yukelis kill there, and they kill the Yankees Sunday night. CC started to lose it in the sixth, actually the fifth. Then the leadoff walk in the sixth, and then everything spiraled downhill with the bullpen, and we know what happened. They have a day off. Everybody, you know, has to sit there and mire around, and, well, oh, my God, I had a couple friends text me, you know, the Red Sox look better than us. One game! So then what happens? Tuesday night rolls around. A.J. Burnett goes out there. You know, it wasn't a great performance, but it was, he kept the Yankees in the game. Lester didn't have a great performance either. It's the second game of the season, and the bullpen turns it right around. Right around. And shuts the Red Sox out the final four innings of the game. And Mariano gets his first save of the season. There was a collective sigh of relief across the Yankees universe. But you know what? They have to play again. 162 games. You have to pace yourself with getting all nutty early on. You know what? Let's talk in July. Seriously, let's talk at the All-Star break. This is a team that was 13-15 last year, won a World Series. This is a team that went 1-4 in 1998. Listen, it's not the same team. It's the same franchise. 1-4. And they won 125 games. Am I saying the Yankees are going to win 125 games this year? No. But you have to take it slow. And I will bring Joe in on this when we start our next segment. What else are we going to talk about today? Well, geez Louise, I am really getting tired of all these sex scandals. And there's a new one. We'll get to Tiger in a second. Tiki Barber, front cover of the New York Post. His wife is 8 months pregnant with twins. And he's been with an intern. I got nothing. Now, is there, how do I put this? Are there temptations out there for the best of us? Yes. But a good friend of mine once told me, because every guy likes to be judged by the notches in their bedpost. But a very close friend of mine here at work said something very resounding to me. He said a lot of guys think that messing around and not getting caught and you know, having as many conquests as humanly possible makes you a bigger man. You are a bigger man for not doing it. Are the temptations there? Of course they are. But it's the measure of a man that separates guys like Tiki Barber and Tiger Woods from the rest of us. Tiki Barber, a guy who got all over his father for doing the same thing to his mother, and now does it himself. And now he'll probably use his father as an excuse. I didn't know any better, blah, 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 blah. I'm sure Joe has lots to say on that. Now Tiger Woods, returning to the Masters. Just listening to Mike Francesa. And of course, you know we're taping this the day before the Masters start. Just so you have some kind of inkling on, you know, when this happened. But Mike brought up a good point. When he goes up to that tee box for his first tee shot, which ESPN is going to cover, just that one shot, if he gets a resounding applause, what does that say? What does that say around the country? You know, I don't care he's a superstar athlete. And do I agree with, you know, the only people that to apologize to was his mother and his wife? Yes. But what kind of message does that send? Seriously. And you might say, oh, that's cheesy, Chris. The kids, you know, kids shouldn't be looking up to him anyway. Well, guess what? They do. They do. That's a hell of a lesson to be teaching a kid to be emulating a guy like Tiger Woods. Oh, we're a forgiving country. Really? Well, Elon may be moving back to Sweden, where it's not so much a forgiving country. As Joey does the mannerisms of the Swedish chef, which I'm sure he will bring into the fray when we come back. And that's next on the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Come on back!
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee blogs on the web. It's The Blob with Bob Lorenz, Keeping Up with the Joneses with Kim Jones, The Pinstripe Bible with Steve Goldman, River Ave Blues, and much, much more. For wall-to-wall Yankees, it's YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. I'm back, baby. I'm back in a big way. And I'm Joe Auriemma. It's good to be back here, Chris.
It's good to have you back. I'm glad you're feeling better. I am. You were a mess.
I was a hot mess. I was in the hospital on Friday, and my poor wife, who has one day off, she has Good Friday off, and...
And where does she spend it? In the ER.
And
George Clooney was not there, by the way.
Let me put it this way. It takes a lot for me to go to the hospital. It takes a lot for me to go to the ER, and yeah, that's all I need to say about the sickness that I had.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
So, yeah, great first segment. I heard you talking about, you know, Tiger Woods and Tiki Barber running himself out of town again. And the Yankees are back. And Twitterverse, everything that you hit on, it was, you know, great points in the first segment. And, you know, you bring up Twitter. And on Sunday night, I was going along. I actually am at a point now where I can't even tweet as much as I used to, because I used to get so agitated with people living on every pitch. I mean, I can understand going nuts in a big spot, but just living on every pitch, it kills me. So finally, my final tweet of the night was just, I feel like Twitterverse is Ricky Vaughn sitting in his chair flipping a ball up and down. And I wish that Jake Taylor would just come on here and say, "Relax, kid. There's 161 more of these to go." Because really, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And Sweeney commented, and he said, "Joe, this is just the latest form of people basically living on every pitch. It used to be Barstools, then it was WFAN, now it's Twitter. It's just, this is how people are."
And that's how people are in this area. And like I said in the monologue at the outset of this podcast, it's just the way things are. I don't dislike it. I love it, because if people weren't like that, we wouldn't have shows like this.
No, and I give people credit for living and dying on every waking moment, Yankees. But
it does, as Joe says, it really tends to, especially early in the season, like a game in, it really tends to just drain everything out of your system to be like, wow, what are you going to be like game 80?
I mean, they're I can understand when they're like this on every pitch in the World Series and in the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely.
And even then, you and I are just like, geez, it's just it was the first batter of the game. Calm down.
Yeah,
we got nine more innings.
We talked about it.
Oh, it is crazy. And I love the people that are on there, because they're very knowledgeable. And there are people that are not knowledgeable on there that live on every pitch. But it does make for good conversation, and we've talked about it before. And they're going to continue living on every pitch, and you know, thinking that a ball in the second inning is CeCe looks terrible.
Yeah.
He just threw a ball outside. It made the count 3-1. What is he's getting behind batters? Come on,
listen.
Calm down.
It was his first start. He even admitted in the post game show right here on Yes that in the fifth inning he felt like he was starting to get tired a little bit, and it's his first start.
Yeah,
you know, you got to get these guys. You know, CeCe's
a slow starter to begin with.
CeCe doesn't play winter ball, okay? No, CeCe doesn't play fall ball.
And he admits he's not good in April.
He's getting arm strength.
He's not good in April.
He's still building up arm strength. He's still working on how he falls off the mound. And you could see on some of his pitches, he was falling off towards the third base side, and he was awkward.
Yeah.
And that's something he was working on in spring training. As far as A.J. Burnett goes, listen, he gave up 3 earned runs in 5 innings. I'll take it. With that offense, I'll take that.
Yeah.
And if the bullpen does what they did on Tuesday night.
And that's another thing, the bullpen issue. I mean,
there are no issues yet.
No, and I agree. But everybody made an issue out of the first night.
Understood.
And I'm just saying that there are no issues. This team showed last night what they did, showed Tuesday night what they did all of last year, riding a hot bullpen through the whole season, a lot of solid arms. Alfredo Aceves, is it any wonder that this guy kind of righted things in the right direction for this bullpen? He's just been great since the Yankees got him. He's now 12-1, ending with Mo and Jabba. Jabba's a big story right now. Jabba, he lost the fifth starter job, and then everybody was trying to say, well, you know, he didn't win back the eighth inning role. But if Tuesday night was any implication of how he's going to pitch in that role. I'll take that every time.
I think the main thing with Jabba on Tuesday night was the fact that, A, his velocity was up on his fastball, and his slider was biting, reminiscent of 2007, and it was 87 miles an hour.
He made hitters look silly.
And I believe it was Kenny Singleton or Al Leiter, I forget who made the point on our telecast, but they said, that looks exactly like a fastball, and at the last second, it drops right out.
Yep.
And J.D. Drew was one of the batters.
He looked silly.
He looked absolutely silly. And if you could break a guy's knees like J.D. Drew in the second game of the season, listen, it is just the second game, so I don't want to get too high or too low. That's the thing you have to realize. You can't get too high or too low during a baseball
season. Right,
right. Until, you know, you're dealing with the playoff push. Well,
it's got to be
August, September.
It is encouraging to see, though, that they bounce back after a bad performance.
Absolutely.
And
that's what you want to see.
That's what you want. You know, like I said, I'm not one to just sit there and analyze every pitch throughout the season. I'm one that kind of sits back and watches each performance as they come. And last night was Tuesday night was a good performance. And, you know, Sunday night was not a good performance.
The thing that gets me is Yankee fans.
Gonna happen.
Yankee fans have a very long memory. Like when they signed Javi Vasquez, all people could think about was the grand slam he gave up to Johnny Damon in Game 7 in 2004. And it seemed like after that first loss to the Red Sox, correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seemed like Yankee fans, they always focus on the negative. And they lost that first game to the Red Sox and they felt, oh my God, here we go again. We're going to lose 8 in a row again.
Yeah, I mean, here we
relax.
Go.
Relax.
Here we go. We're not only going to lose 8 in a row, but now we got Lester against A.J. Burnett on the mound on Tuesday night. Oh, my God. That could be two.
I wasn't worried about Lester. I'll be worried about Lester when he gets his legs under him, when he gets his arm under him in June and July.
I agree.
Then I'll be worried about Lester.
I agree.
He's going to be a tough out. You're going to have to scratch and claw to get runs.
Like I said, right now you can't look at matchups. There's only two freaks of nature that you could really look at matchups.
Roy Halladay.
And Tim Lincecum.
Those
are the only two freaks where you could say,
unbelievable,
by the way. Oh, my God. How good is Tim Lincecum?
88 pitches for Halladay.
Oh, and Roy Halladay. I mean,
I know it's the Nats, but still. I don't care.
And thank God the Yankees don't have to deal with that guy anymore. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and how about Barry Zito?
You know what? It's so funny because I'm in a couple of fantasy leagues, and I picked up Barry Zito just because Cliff Lee's in the 15-day DL. So I kind of went on the heap wire and looked at it and saw that Barry Zito was out there, and I knew he was pitching against Houston, who doesn't
without
have the greatest,
Lance Berkman,
doesn't mean, have the greatest hitting lineup in the world anymore. But still, they're a major league ball club. I mean, and on any given night, Barry Zito looked great. Looked great. Phenomenal.
Six innings.
You know, what do you have, the 7 strikeouts?
3 hits.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. And pitching behind Lincecum and having Matt Cain there, that San Francisco team could be good.
Yeah,
they
could be really good.
They really good.
Like it is all the way across the board, they just have to stay healthy.
And score some runs.
Exactly.
They have to score some runs.
But all right, so our main common denominator is, Joe, relax.
Relax.
Pace
take
yourself.
It easy. Yes. You know, if Frankie says it, we all say it, relax. That's
Frankie
all.
Goes to Hollywood. All right, when Joe and I come back, we will sink our teeth into first that NCAA tournament final. Both, actually. We'll look at the men and the women.
I'd like to just make one point before we go to break here.
Sure, go ahead.
Chris Sheeran made a comment on the podcast that I was on, the last one, and he said that I would rather be caught dead than watching golf, and that he would only watch golf maybe on the Sunday of the Masters.
Come on.
And as we sit here and tape this podcast,
it's Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus.
We're sitting here watching the par 3 tournament. So, am I catching you dead here? What's going on, Chris?
It's Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus. Come on. Give me a break.
Chris, this tournament doesn't even matter. It's the par 3
of
the Masters.
It doesn't matter. It's Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus.
But you'd rather be caught dead than watching golf. And you're watching golf.
I'm watching the par 3 tournament.
Oh, will you stop?
With the Golden Bear and Arnie.
All right, go get yourself an Arnold Palmer. A little iced tea lemonade.
John Daly.
Hey-o.
All right, we'll be back with more on the podcast, the NCAA Championship Games, and we return right after this.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the 2-time Emmy Award-winning video content at yesnetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features, only at yesnetwork.com.
Want to have your voice heard? Leave a comment or question on the Yankees and anything else sports related for Chris at 646-487-3668. And now, back to Off the Wall.
Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. It's time to get hoopified. I think I just made up that word anyway. But
I like that.
Yeah, I didn't mention it in the monologue, much to my chagrin, but Joe, in a break, decided to remind me that we have to touch on the NCAA Finals.
Amazing game.
The men, of course, was Monday. The women took the court on Tuesday. First, the men, Butler and Duke. Just an unbelievably played game. Great point. Again, I'm going to bring him up, Mike Francesa, with Butler's defense and the way the officials were calling the game. Mm-hmm. The officials allowed Butler hand checks. They allowed contact. You know, everybody came down the lane. You can get hit. There weren't a lot of fouls called. I don't know about you, but that's the reason I like college basketball. One of the reasons why I like it. First, it's fast-paced, and it is fast-paced because the officials call the game a little bit looser. The pros, you can't get into an ebb and flow in a pro game because there's too many fouls called.
No,
I agree. Too many guys being babies. You know, if they blow on their hand going up, they want a foul call. Enough. Just play the game
play
the way it was meant to
play
be played.
It out.
Get some bumps. Get some bruises. And college, you know, these kids laid it all out on the line. And I was just, I mean.
This game was awesome.
Mike Krzyzewski, God bless him. No one works harder than him in college. You know, he's one of the best coaches of all time. I didn't know he was 63 years old. He's 63 years old.
He's been a Duke for 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, think about that. His mentor, Bobby Knight, they're now putting him in like the same sentence, not even paragraph anymore, as Bobby Knight. He has his fourth national championship.
I think he's surpassed Bobby Knight at this point. Well, I think there's only two guys in college basketball history that are more of a name than Mike Krzyzewski, and that would be John Wooden. And I think he might even be, because Adolph Rupp did it so long ago and with not as many quality teams. And Dean Smith, I think he surpassed Dean Smith too. He's got four national titles. And Duke is now every year in and year out, they are a good program. Year in and year. And he's been at Duke for 30 years,
yeah,
Chris.
I mean, I gotta be honest. I was rooting for Butler because my brackets were, you know, blown up. But Duke is usually a team I love to hate.
I hate him too.
But I got to be happy for Krzyzewski. I'm just happy for Krzyzewski. I'm very sad for Butler. It would have been a great story, especially if that last shot went down. I mean, think about that. You know, you have the story with Duke winning. But if that last shot goes in,
really got to feel bad for Gordon Hayward because he is the team's best player. He did not have a great shooting performance.
I think he was 2 for 12.
Yeah, he was not great.
Singler guarded him.
And here's the thing, you know, when he could take the lead and they had the chance for the final shot, he basically pulled a Larry Bird from, you know, years past where, the shot was online. It was online, but it just a little too hard. It clanked off the rim. And you know, Duke gets it back, 3.6 seconds left. I don't know what the hell Duke was thinking, making the first free throw. I do not like the call missing that second free throw.
I don't know. Before we talk about that, I don't know how you feel about that shot by Hayward to take the lead.
Yeah.
But if you see Zubek, now listen, this is me overanalyzing. I understand that. In the heat of the moment, you're taking the shot.
Yeah.
But Zubek released off Howard. If Hayward goes up and notices that, instead of trying to be the hero, fires a pass to Howard.
Yep.
Howard is right there for an easy.
Yeah, that's
deuce.
True. That's true.
Howard's right there.
And then that final shot. You really got to feel for the kid. But this is what I was gonna, tell you before, Chris. I love the fact of looking at these two teams, and everybody talked about Kentucky, and everybody talked about Kansas, and these big offensive teams, and two teams that were in the national title game were there because of good defense and they made their free throws.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down to. They made their free throws. And, you know, Butler, two games in a row, went 10 minutes without scoring a field goal or had one field goal in 10 minutes. You got to give Butler credit for staying in these games, playing hard-nosed defense, making their free throws when they have to, and just continuing to just wow people over. And the team concept is there. You look at Mike Krzyzewski, and those guys have been together. You look at Butler. Those guys have been together. And
they're going to be together.
and they're going to be together. And you look at a team like North Carolina, they win the national championship last year, and the team dismantles, and they're in the NIT this year. That's what you have to just love about this final. This final was not only a good game,
but it was old school college basketball.
They were good ambassadors, two good ambassadors for the sport itself, and that's what I loved.
All right, let's move on to the women now, and your fourth cousin twice removed, Gino Auriemma.
Yes, sir.
He gets back-to-back national championships.
And they don't lose.
78 straight wins.
Yeah, they don't lose.
The last team to beat them was Stanford back in 2008.
In the tournament.
In the Final Four.
Yeah.
So they avenged that loss by beating Stanford in the final this year. And, you know, I was going back and forth between the Yankees in the final. And I go to the final, and it's halftime.
It's close.
And I see the score. And I was like, that can't be right. It was 20-12, Stanford.
Yeah, I know.
And I was like, wait a minute. UConn scored 12 points in 20 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, they were off.
And Stanford had it going until their senior, Appel, twisted her ankle, re-injured her ankle. She leaves the game, and then Maya Moore just goes
took over
off. 11 of the first 17 points UConn scored in the second half, Maya Moore put them in the hoop. She finished with 23 points, 11 boards. And listen, UConn women's basketball is the industry. Gino Auriemma, say what you want about him, but when he started there, it's not like he inherited this program.
No.
He has built this program. So you know what? Good for him. He gets another championship.
He's got the pick of the litter now when he recruits.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and he's got a 78-game winning streak. You know, and I believe Stanford was up 19-8 before they took that 20-12 lead into halftime. And that 19-8 lead was the largest deficit UConn had all season long.
That's unbelievable.
And this was the first time all year that they didn't win by double digits.
Oh, my God.
But I don't think he's really going to care.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He's got another national title. They are the industry standard. And, you know, I always say this about Gino, is that he knows basketball. It's not just about women and men and who he coaches. He is a good basketball coach, and that's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
That is why he is a Hall of Fame coach, and really, he's got some program there. If I were him, I would never leave.
And did you hear the only way he'd leave?
Yeah, if Duke or North Carolina opened up.
Yeah,
it's the only way he would.
I think it was ESPN who did the story in the interview, and they asked him, "Would you take over for Jim Calhoun?" And he said, "Why? I would ruin both programs."
Yeah, because he'd go over there and, you know,
he'd have to start all over again with the men, and the women would get a new coach. Not that, you know, it would just, I'm using his words. These aren't my words. He said, why ruin both programs? And the only job he would take is if Coach K said he was leaving.
Mm-hmm, who he's very close with.
Or North Carolina.
And you know what? I guarantee you, he's just a successful guy.
He's not stupid, too. He's not going to take a job at a mid-major where, you know, his legacy is going to be tarnished.
Right.
He wants the cream of the crop university that he can just make a lateral move and pick up right where he left off.
That's it. He's already built one program.
He did. He doesn't need to do it again.
He had to do it against a Tennessee brand.
Oh, absolutely.
And Pat Summitt, who
are already entrenched.
Yeah, and now it's him. It's Pat Summitt's. He's left her, you know, in the dust now.
Yeah.
He's left her in the dust.
Yeah. All right, let's move on now really quickly because I don't want to spend too much time on this. But I gave you my thoughts in the open. Just want to get my partner's thoughts here on the former Giant running back, Tiki Barber, who is now running from his now ex-wife, almost ex-wife.
You know, Chris, I have the same reaction that you have. Shame on you. Your wife has twins. She's 8 months pregnant. She has twins. And
apparently they've been split up for a while. So it's not like this is just happening.
Yeah, but you know what? He did conceive a child like 8 months ago. So it hasn't been that long.
Yeah.
Two children. Two children.
He has two. He's going to have two more.
No, but I'm saying he's got two more in the womb. So
right.
He conceived two children 8 months ago.
That's true.
So it's not that long ago. I can tell you this. 8 months is not a long time in Marrickville.
It seems like this is just becoming the standard for everyone. It's not even like it's going to be... I'm going to predict 5 years from now, no one's going to even care.
No.
Something's going to come on the front page of the Post, and no one's going to even care. They're going to say, oh, well, whatever.
That's where society's come. It's so accepted now. Now it's like, oh, Tiki did that? Real shock.
And it all goes back to Tiger and what kind of reception he's going to get and what kind of message that sends. And like I said, I didn't want to spend a lot of time on this.
You make a good point, though, Chris. You make the point where, you know, he blames his father for doing what, you know, this basically the same thing to his mother. And, you know, it's funny because Tiger does the same thing. Tiger blames his father for, you know, having adulterous affairs on his mother. And they just go and do the same thing. I don't get it.
And they use it as a crutch.
I don't get it.
They use it as a crutch.
Shame on them. Shame on all of them.
Anyway, I that's it for Tiki. I mean, I can't talk about this anymore. It's just, it's getting too prevalent in our society, this stuff going on. If you're going to be in a lofty position, don't cheat on your wife.
Agreed.
All right, agreed. Let's move on, and we're going to talk more about this with Tiger Woods coming back to the Masters. That's next on the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com.
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee blogs on the web. It's The Blob with Bob Lorenz, Keeping Up with the Joneses with Kim Jones, The Pinstripe Bible with Steve Goldman, River Ave Blues, and much, much more. For wall-to-wall Yankees, it's YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Billy Payne, the Augusta National Golf Club chairman. Quote directly from him. He forgot in the process to remember that with fame and fortune comes responsibility, not invisibility. It is not simply the degree of his conduct that is so egregious here. It is the fact that he disappointed all of us, and more importantly, our kids and our grandkids. That from the Augusta National Golf Club chairman, Billy Payne.
And you know what I'm disappointed with, Billy? I'm disappointed in the fact that you still don't let women or minorities play golf at your course. That's what I'm disappointed in you, Billy.
Well, that's one of
Don't come out and make comments. You and Hootie Johnson can kiss my butt. Seriously.
All right. You heard it right here. And that's one of the reasons why I'm not a big fan of the sport.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I did not mean to...
No, it's okay. It goes to the point of being elitist. And if there's one, you know, it's Caddyshack. You know, it's the people playing golf and, you know, the caddies being treated like they're lower than whale scum. And
look,
you know, people talk about the gallantry and the this and
stop.
The that. And, I can't relate.
Stop.
I can't relate.
And look,
I didn't have that kind of upbringing.
I know, Billy, you're saying this because you needed to make a statement. But until you get things right, until you make things right. Don't make any comments about anybody, because what you're doing is just as bad as what Tiger did. I'm sorry.
The only thing I have to say, and we're going to wrap this up very soon, but the only thing I have to say is what I said in the beginning. Tiger Woods, the reception he gets from this Augusta Gallery, not only, you know, on his opening tee shot, but the entire weekend. And, you know, if this guy wins, which is possible. I talked to Jimmy Roberts earlier this week. And he said he'd be shocked if Tiger Woods didn't make the cut.
Of course.
And I also asked him if he thought he could win. He said, of course he could win. He knows this course like the back of his hand. And it's not like Tiger, you know, it's not like he never played at Augusta. You're talking about a guy who had, I don't know, listen, my golf knowledge isn't that great. But I think the Masters, he destroyed everybody. Wasn't that a record?
Yeah. Yeah, back in 97.
Wasn't he like 18 under or something?
Yeah, he's got the record. It was his first Masters. It's back in 97, I believe. And Chris, you know, it's funny because Jimmy Roberts makes a good point. I would be in complete shock if he's not in the top 10 on Sunday. And you know what I would also be in shock with? I'd be in shock if Phil was in the top 10 on Sunday. Because between Phil, what's going on in his personal life, between his wife going through her illness and his mother going through what she's going through, poor Phil's got so much on his mind right now with family, personal matters, that these are things that will, you know, stick with Phil, and it's going to bother him. Whereas Tiger, who's been a robot since he's, you know, 8 years old, since they basically made him who he is, golf is golf to him.
Listen, I'm just glad he's back and playing golf, so hopefully we could just put all of this nonsense behind us. But apparently he's going to get a pass. You're going to get a pass, Tiger, until you come to Bethpage.
Oh, yeah.
And then bring earplugs, because I'm telling you right now, the people in the tri-state area do not forget. They are passionate about their sports, and they are passionate about giving it to people who deserve it. And you, my friend, might be the best golfer on the planet, but you deserve everything you get when you go back to Bethpage. There should be no rules written. There should be, listen, I'm not saying getting stuff thrown at him, but people should be allowed to say whatever is on their mind. Because he and his caddy did, with every camera click before that. Tiger, give me a freaking break, okay? With your backswing and camera clicks going off. Talk to a baseball player when he's trying to hit a 95 mile an hour fastball with 45,000 people in the seats. Do they go, shh? No. Get over it. And his caddy, Steve Williams, I wish I had a crack at that guy. I really do.
Yeah, no.
I really do.
He's a bad dude. He's a bad dude.
Listen, you play.
In the words of Urban Meyer, you're a bad guy.
Yeah. Put that in your pipe and smoke it the next time you go on New Zealand 60 Minutes. Good day, sir.
I said good day, sir. Good day, Dr. Brewster.
Tell him how you really feel, Chris. Good day, doctor. Wow.
I can't believe I quoted Tootsie. Wow. Very timely. I'm a timely guy.
It's good stuff out of you.
Oh, boy.
Dustin Hoffmanica. And Bill Murray. People forget Bill Murray was in that movie.
Not a typical Bill Murray movie.
No, the roommate, kind of a character on the outside.
Yeah. So, by the way, some Yankee news. The Yankee son, Felicity Huffman. So there's going to be some desperate housewives going on.
No.
I want to see Felicity Huffman face Evan Longoria. That's what I want.
Okay, great. And on that note, we're going to wrap things up here on the Off the Wall podcast. A big welcome back to Joe Auriemma.
Hey-o.
He will be with us now for the remainder of the Yankee season. And, you know, I always say the Yankees, the first place Yankees since the podcast started, they're not in first place right now.
Well, that's because Greek did the first one. Yeah. Greek did the first
one. He put
one
the kibosh on.
Greek, you did an excellent job. I'm just busting your chops, buddy.
Yeah, he did do a good job in this thing. So for Joe Auriemma, I'm Chris Sheeran. We will see you next week with another Off the Wall podcast, more Yankees baseball, and hopefully no more philanderers. See you next week, everybody.
Bye.